This evening all of us have come together to share in some silence, share in some stillness together. There's something very special about the presence of a group of people whose only interest, only purpose to be here is to raise awareness, to deepen wisdom, to become more real. So sitting together in silence, we create something which is quite special. This is something that I think there is a sense of in many kinds of religious rituals, occasions, ceremonies. For myself, I was brought up as a Catholic, so we would go to Mass every Sunday. And there was a sense in which the ritual, the prescribed series of movements, the words that were the same every week, they create a sense of eternity, sense of changelessness. You don't go there looking for innovation. You don't go there looking for change, for something new. You go there to experience that same timeless reality that you experience every week. Actually, of course, I went there because my parents made me go there. But that's a different matter. And so, even so, I still can get this kind of sense. You know, and I'm sure that is very much a watered down version of what a kind of truly meaningful spiritual ritual can be. When I was in Thailand and staying at Wat Nanachat and was given the very great blessing and opportunity to be able to participate in the rituals that the community does there. The regular sitting meditation or the rituals every full moon and quarter moon with the lay people, making precepts and so on. And so you get a sense for this way that a group of people can somehow create a shared space, a space of unity and harmony. It doesn't kind of replace all the differences that people have. You can go out afterwards and still argue all you like with all the other people that were there. But at that time, in that particular place, all of those things are suspended. The changes of the world. And we come and we enter into a time that's not of time. Into a place that's not in the world. And so I guess that for many of us there's this sense that while many religions provide that sense of space or a sense of connection with something greater, something that transcends the mundane, and usually it's not that, but it's the other things, the other kind of baggage which religions bring along with it, which become difficult, become problematic. The dogmas or the doctrines or various kinds of other things. And so I think it's one of the wonderful things about Buddhism that it places that experience of stillness right at the center, and even the central Buddhist image, the Buddha image itself, you know, of a man sitting in meditation, sheltered and protected under the Bodhi tree, sitting on a lotus. Just sitting peacefully, aware and awake. So that image itself is an image of possibility for humanity. In the stories of how Buddhism spread in the different parts of the world in ancient times, you always find that it'll say that the pilgrim travelled from to a new Buddhist country and took with them the Buddhist scriptures and also a Buddha image. And so somehow that image captures in some way the essence of what Buddhism is about in a way that words can't. And I was sitting meditating in the retreat I've just been in the last couple of weeks, and I just had this image would come to my mind quite spontaneously of just a lake, and it was sitting in the middle of a lake. I was perfectly still all around, and when that image came to my mind, then any of the worries or anxieties or thoughts that I might have had, it just dissolved into it. Just let go of these images and just let them melt away. Like melting ice, just melting into the lake. And when we experience that, then we realize that there's actually no need for anxiety. There's no need for stress. It doesn't actually help us in any way. If we like to think of it in biological terms, it's just a kind of hangover from the days when we lived in the jungle. We'd have to fill our body with adrenaline to give us the energy to run away when we're attacked by a saber-toothed tiger. In that case, then, yes, adrenaline, stress and tension is very useful. And let us survive. But now it's not. It's outlived its usefulness. It pumps us full of that feeling. And we hold on to it because it's that feeling of stress, of dukkha, which makes us be alive, reminds us who we are. Some time ago I was getting, somebody had given me a lift to somewhere, and the guy giving me a lift was this young Vietnamese fella, just finishing his degree at uni, and he gave me a lift. It was a racing car that he was all kind of tricked out with all the wheels and the safety cage and everything, like done really properly for racing. And we're driving. His family is a very devout Buddhist family, and he says, "Oh, you know, my mum doesn't really like me doing this." Mm-hmm. Really? You astonish me. Mum doesn't like you racing car. But of course that's exactly the reason why he's doing it. I didn't say that to him. That's the reason why you do it, isn't it? When you're that age, yeah, young males, you have to fill yourself with some kind of and it's an energy, it's an adrenaline, it's a feeling. It comes from stress, from anxiety, from danger. It's like the initiation rituals that you do in indigenous societies and tribal societies. There's incredible pain and stress that you have to go through. Bodily mutilation or taking drugs or tests of endurance, all kinds of things. So you feel. You feel, you know, this is what I am. I feel this. That's who I am. And so that's why you do it, is to establish yourself as a different person. You're not your mother, not your father. Feel something different, feel something that they don't feel. That's why we like the danger, we like the thrill. We like the fear. It tells us who we are. Creates a sense of identity. And when we let go of that, then it's scary because there's nothing there. There's not any me. There's no identity. It's still lake. It's the same for anyone, isn't it? If you say like the shape of ripples on water is always different. Everyone has always the ripples are always different. So everyone has their own. When they're disturbed, when they're anxious, when they're stressed, we're always disturbed or stressed in different ways. But when we're peaceful, it's all the same. Peaceful lake is exactly the same as any other peaceful lake. And so this is why we're afraid of peace. It's why we do anything to avoid it. We give ourselves stress or distraction or anything at all. Anything. But yet so desperate for something to do, we'll even end up reading the nutrition labels on milk cartons. In the time that took us to read that nutrition label, we could have closed our eyes and breathed two or three times mindfully. Which is much more nutritious. So then that when we experience peace, and it comes as a revelation, first time. I still remember the first time I ever found peace of mind in my meditation. It was like a shock. You know, that's what peace of mind is. Or rather, that's what peace of mind was just a minute ago before I started thinking about it. That's what they're talking about. It is possible. It is real. And it comes with this force. And you really know the peacefulness and the softness and the gentleness of the mind. It comes with this force that changes everything in your life. Everything gets turned upside down. You finally got something to measure by, or something to compare with. Like you've been in the ocean all your life and suddenly you see some dry land. Oh, now you can know what wetness is like. You climb up on the shore and you look back. You feel the solidness of the rock under your feet, you realize that, oh, that's what people meant when they talked about solid. So there's that peace, and when we feel that, we experience that peace. It's almost like the whole world collapses into it, melts away into the peace. Just melts away. And the astonishing thing is that if we think about it, we think about all of the things that we'll lose, you know. And just imagine that when you're sitting in meditation, and they have a moment's peace. In that moment's peace, you don't have a family, you don't have a home, you don't have a career, you don't have friends. All of those things that we think are so important for us, in that moment, none of them are there. It's just that stillness. And it's okay. It's okay that those things aren't there. It's okay that we can put aside everything. Everything. Anything you can think of, we can just put it aside and feel nothing but stillness and peace. And so for me, this experience is at the heart of the spiritual life or religious life. It gives meaning, it illuminates everything else in life. It gives a background, a context. It's a frame where everything can somehow make sense. There's this very beautiful myth, one of my favorite myths from the Hindu mythology. And that's the myth of the story of the dream of Vishnu. And in this story, Vishnu, the great god, the sustainer of the cosmos, he lies dreaming on an ocean of milk. Everywhere, as far as you can see, is just pure white milk. And in the middle of it, God is lying, dreaming. And in his dreams is all of us. The whole world. The whole play of history, humanity, the marketplaces, the cars, buildings, politics, the trash, even the nutrition labels on milk cartons. There's no nutrition label on the milk in the sea, though. That's just all of those things are just part of his dream, and they just go on there, and he's completely undisturbed by it, and the sea of milk is completely still. And then one day somebody's a little bit too adventurous, somebody's a little bit naughty. And so that's why we always have to be very thankful for naughty people, because they're the ones who give us the good stories. You can't make good stories out of good people. Boring. And so he went where he shouldn't have done, explored too far, left the boundaries of this temporal world, and he fell out of Vishnu's mouth. Didn't know what was happening, of course. He didn't have a sense of scale or perspective, and he rolled down the side of Vishnu's cheek like a mountain and then splashed into the ocean of milk. Still didn't know what was happening. Eventually he swam out and he turned around and looked back. And there's Vishnu, the body of Vishnu, lying there dreaming. And he realized that that's what his life was. Just in there, playing, making love, eating, sleeping, thinking, doing. His whole career, meaning of life and everything was just one little tiny figment within that ocean of stillness. And then he realized that, well, he had to go back and keep playing his part. So he climbed back in, went back in Vishnu's mouth, and kept on playing. But he knew that it's different. Everything is the same, but everything's so different. So for me, this is a very wonderful image of what life is like as a meditator, as a yogi, as somebody who has had some experience, at least a little bit, experience of this thing called peace. So it doesn't stop us from living life. You know, there are some people who that's all they do. They just sit in meditation all the time in the hills or in the retreat. But there's very, very few. You know, I've been a monk for how many years? 17, 18 years or something. I don't know anybody. I'm just trying to think now. I don't think I know anybody who just does that. Just sits and meditates and never does anything else. I know some people who come pretty close for periods of time, maybe several years. But we all have to play our part. And so the purpose of this experiencing this peace is not to negate what we're doing. It's not to say what we're doing is meaningless. It's not to say that what we're doing is wrong. Not to say that what we're doing is serves no higher purpose. But it is to say that what we do is only part of the game. It's only part of what life is about. And that every day when we do our work, when we talk, when we and all the things we do every day. And that's framed by stillness. And the stillness is always the same. The things we do may change every day, but the stillness is always the same. So that's my little talk for you this evening on stillness. And I offer that for your reflection.